Sad Pod Episode 14, Raising Children with Special Needs, recorded February 24th, 2016.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Sad Pod, where stay-at-home dads talk about their happy, sad lives. I'm your host, Keith Johnson. The dads joining me on today's show are Tony Hernandez, Dan Scott, and Chris Burkhart. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Good, good. If you want to know more about these guys, especially what these amazing dads look like, get on over to our website and check out our cast page for photos, bios, and more importantly, how you can contact these guys. Today we're talking about raising special needs kids, for lack of a better term. According to Wikipedia, in the United States, special needs is a term used in clinical diagnostic and functional development to describe individuals who require assistance for disabilities that may be medical, mental, or psychological. In the United Kingdom, for our dads over there, special needs often refers to special needs within the educational context. This is also referred to as special education needs. In the U.S., special needs in education has a legal definition, which is tied to funding for services. So that's where a lot of issues come in. Many times the definition is not one some of the children in needs of services can meet. So like I said, it does cause some issues getting help for your children. Special needs can refer to anything from autism to Down syndrome and learning disabilities, also from blindness to deafness, loss of limbs, or other physical limitations. According to census.gov, more than 56.7 million Americans are living with disability. That's almost 20% of the population. And then also, according to the National Center for Education Statistics, for children ages 3 to 21, 35% have some sort of special learning disability. To me, though, I hate the phrase special needs. I don't consider my son having special needs. I just consider his needs different. Today, also, while we're talking about special needs, we have a guest with us to help bring some of the non-dad side to the issue. I thought it might be good to have him join us today. So today we have Dave Kahlo. Dave worked for 6 years at the May Center for Child Development Residential School for Kids with Autism and Other Developmental Delays. In the time he worked there as both a classroom teacher and group home supervisor, he and his colleagues use analyst methods with the students who ranged in ages from 6 to 20 years. They took a lot of data and used that information to guide their treatment plans. In fact, Dave says he uses a lot of those techniques that he learned on his own kids today. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great, and thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I'm going to start with you, Dave. When you hear the word special needs, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
Well, I liked what you said earlier in that it really is more different than I think special. We're talking about kids who learn differently than some of their peers do. You mentioned physical limitations, all sorts of things that just make them a little bit different or require different stuff in the classroom or around home. But that's Dave the teacher talking. But in working with, I can't even count how many kids and parents I've worked with over the years, and observing what these kids mean to their parents and what they mean to their siblings, and what they mean to really everyone whose lives they touch, whether it be mom and dad or educators or advocates or anyone. It's a number of things. It's going to bed at night thinking, what else can I do? And then waking up thinking the exact same thing. You know, it's putting your needs last because, you know, this person needs you more. It's giving up a career because you have someone who needs you, and they need you more than that job. You know, it's staring at the calendar on the fridge and realizing how busy your kid is with therapies and doctor's appointments and IEP meetings and who knows what. So it's a whole lot of things. It's what the kid needs, and it's everything that happens in their world around that.
Right. And Dave, you were a stay-at-home dad for a while too, correct?
I was, yes. Let's see. When I was working at the school, I would work, my wife and I swapped shifts, basically work shifts and home shifts. So she was teaching during the day, and then I would go work in the group home from 3 to 11 p.m. And then when that job ended, I started working from home, and I worked from home for, oh my gosh, 6 or 7 years, I think. And basically half my daughter's life and almost all of my son's life. So I got to be the lucky dad who never missed, you know, the school concert or bring dad to lunch day or all those goofy things. Things have changed now. I have a cubicle job and, you know, I'm a typing drone. But yeah, for almost a decade, I got to be the stay-at-home dad. And boy, it was a great time.
Yeah. So you'll have some insight of what some of us, our dads here today are going through, not just with the special needs, but just with being a dad at home anyways.
Well, I hope so. Like not having an adult to talk to for hours at a time.
Exactly. All right. So Tony, how about you? To you, what is special needs and what's your situation?
I agree for the, you know, the definition for the most part. But I've also seen through teaching, I taught for 6 years, that if the child doesn't meet the actual definition that's set forth within the confines of what it means to be special ed eligible, I've seen parents be frustrated. I've seen schools and teachers be frustrated by it. And it's something that it takes a concerted effort by everybody that comes together for that child's needs during an IEP meeting to see whether they can work together to find a solution to a problem that is sometimes usually very cut and dry when it comes to the definition.
Right. And what's your situation at home?
My son has what's called sensory process disorder or sensory integration disorder. And his condition manifests mostly with feedback, either auditory or sometime listening. But the biggest issue he has is with sensation, either his clothing or sound, or the other big thing is eating. He's got a very limited palate of foods that he will eat. He's got an exaggerated gag reflex, smells set him off, taste, texture, and it's something that we've working through the pediatrician, we're looking to get him into a treatment outpatient situation shortly to address that.
Okay. And what about you, Chris?
Well, like my daughter has the same condition, sensory processing disorder, as well as what's called expressive language disorder. Essentially, she can't speak. Her verbal level is down to that of a 2-year-old. And when it comes to the term special needs, I don't get quite as offended, but I think it's kind of also one of those to where, like with my daughter, if we go out to, like, say, the Minnesota State Fair, she has to actually be on one of those little monkey leashes, because otherwise she will bolt. And she has literally zero, how do I put it, the sense of safety. She has just all impulse. And I think a lot of the special needs children, the children who autism, things like that, people don't see that as kind of the normal. So they immediately say, well, they're special needs, rather than the old term of, and sorry if anybody gets offended, but they'd call them a retard. And it's kind of become the term, you could say, to say, well, there's special needs, even though there's actually, my wife actually works in a group home, and the actual diagnosis is mental retardation, but you're not allowed to say it. But it's like, if that's a diagnosis, that's what they have. But I think the whole special needs term has become almost the what people would call a retard back 20 years ago.
It's become the new pejorative.
Yeah. And to some, it's extremely offensive, because they'll immediately say, well, this child has a behavior issue. And even though it's because the parents don't give a rat's rear end, they'll immediately label them as special needs, and it kind of causes issues for those who actually do have a mental condition that they have impulse issues. They can't deal with certain foods, or like my biggest issue with my daughter is the fact that she will, if there's too much stimuli, she can't focus. So if we're trying to do something, and literally we've actually had this happen, she sees a ball, she will bolt across the street. If we had not literally grabbed her coat and, for lack of better words, it looked like something out of a movie because her feet actually went up. But had I not grabbed her coat, she would have gotten hit by a semi truck. It's literally one of those to where it's become the new term, for lack of better words, to classify all.
Right. And I understand the need for the term, just because, like we said, to get the resources that you need in school or for insurance or whatever, you kind of need that. But to me, I don't need to label my kid to know there's an issue. All I need is to figure out who can help him and how. And to me, that's the only thing that I care about. If he needs a label to get the services he needs, then so be it. But I don't need a label for him to be to know that he needs help.
I think it's also too broad of a term. Kind of like they'll say everybody from Asperger's to actual classic autism, they're all autistic. It's become this broad term where they'll just label that person that, when it's like, no, they maybe need special needs, but they have a language disorder. They have a behavioral disorder. They have a sensory disorder. I'm the kind to where when somebody says, oh, they have special needs, it's like, no, my daughter has sensory processing disorder. She has some special needs, but that doesn't make her any different than my oldest daughter, who excels in everything but math.
That's a great thing. How old is your daughter, Chris?
My middle child, the one that has issues, for lack of better words, is 3. And then my oldest is 5.
Okay. And what about you, Dan?
Well, in my case, my son's needs are purely physical, and hopefully they'll be temporary. He was 10 weeks early, and for being 10 weeks early, his lungs were still underdeveloped for what you would think they would be at that gestational age. So he was diagnosed in the NICU with what they call chronic lung disease. As a result of this, it's the whole reason I became a stay-at-home dad. He was requiring steroidal breathing treatments 3 times a day. I had to give him those, which, you know, detailed putting medicine into a nebulizer and waving a wand in front of his face or putting a mask over his face. Eventually, he didn't need those anymore. We put him on a regular inhaler. He's now outgrown the regular inhaler. But the most special or exceptional thing about his physical condition is that if we can keep him healthy without getting a severe respiratory infection, again, he had pneumonia in the NICU for a month. If we can keep that from happening, the doctors say that his lungs should grow and regenerate enough by the time he's 3 or 4 that he won't develop a lifelong asthmatic condition and won't need special treatment as he gets older. As a result, that means we have to be extra vigilant, especially in cold, flu, RSV season, not to expose him to large groups of people, you know, anywhere where there might be some kind of contagion that's going to make him sick. Beyond that, you know, he's spot on for developmental milestones. He's a little on the light side, but he's not underweight. I think that at his last doctor's appointment, he was in the 10th percentile. So even though he's small, he's not sickly small.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it's a kind of an exceptional case versus, you know, special needs. And I put that in quotes, you know, again, because it's become the catch-all phrase, as Chris was saying. But my kid particularly doesn't fit the mold that a person would envision when they see special needs. You know, they just see him as a normal 17-month-old.
Tony, you got a question?
Dan, I was actually 12 weeks early myself. So let me reassure you that was 40-something years ago, or actually 50 years ago now. So doctors have come a long way with treatments. And if the doctor told you that the lungs would probably be okay by 3 years of age, I think you can probably bank on it.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to hear that, actually.
All right. So, Dan, since we're talking to you here,
all right.
What are your What are the specific challenges that you guys face? I know they're getting less and less, but like on a daily basis, what do you guys have to worry about? What do you guys have to, when you go through your daily routine, is there anything that you guys have to really think about before you go and do something? Or
well, basically currently right now, because it's flu and RSV season, our daily routine is I stay at home with them unless there is a need to go out. You know, we'll go somewhere in off peak hours that it's not going to be crowded or whatever. Beyond that, daily, there's not a whole lot to do, you know, other than keeping them from getting exposed. You know, beforehand when we were having to do the treatments, you know, we'd have to wake up and then, you know, space the treatments out evenly during the day and, you know, always make sure that the right medicines were being put in the nebulizer. There were two of them that went in there and you had to mix them at different ratios. But now, you know, he's my only kid. So, I don't know what normal is, but everything seemed, you know, to us, it's normal, other than the just having to limit his exposure. Now, when we are out in public and, you know, he's a cute kid. Like you see him and he's just freaking adorable. People want to come up and they want to like touch on him and love on him. Oh, what a beautiful little boy, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, use a little blue language here. You hate to be an to people who are trying to be nice to your kid. But, you know, you have to be. Sometimes you just have to be, especially if it's a complete stranger. It's like, you know, get your bugger hooks away from my kid because, you know, I don't know what you have. I don't know if you have anything, period. Just get away from him, you know.
Now, Chris and Tony, I know some of your guys' things are going to be kind of similar because you got your kids have similar issues. What about you and your daily routines or in your going about doing something? Is there something, anything that you guys really have to be cognitive about before you go and do something?
Food issues are very big, so we have a very limited set of places we can go if we go out to eat. And we know that starting out, so we plan ahead where we're going to go so we know that there's a food my son will eat or we'll feed him at home before we go out. One comment I wanted to make to Chris, depending on the degree to which your daughter will run, my son had that at about 2.5, 3 to about 4.5. And we had him on, we had a puppy that had a leash, backpack, and we also had a monkey. And before I had that experience, I used to think it was either the lazy person, parent, or the cruel person that would put their child on a lead. And then when my son started bolting towards, you know, the traffic in a parking lot or towards a road, all of a sudden, my whole opinion of that drastically changed because I wasn't worried about what anybody thought at that point. I want to make sure my son makes it to be an adult and grows. So,
yeah. And that's one of the things, because like we were actually, when she saw the ball, we were right in front of a daycare. So, of course, everybody saw me grab the hood of my daughter's jacket as she was running full speed. And it was literally something you saw of a wrestling move. And I had all these moms look at me in horror because they had just seen me literally grab my daughter at full speed. And that was kind of the moment that we realized, okay, her impulse control is beyond what you normally say of a 2-year-old. Cause that's how old she was at the time. And that's kind of one of our biggest challenges, just going to places where, we can trust her. And I know it sounds really bad, but somebody had spilled laundry soap down our stairs in our apartment, and she, as soon as she got to the bottom, she reached down and started to mess with it and was going to put it in her mouth. And it's things that you don't see a normal 3-year-old doing. And I've actually had comments going, well, is there something wrong with your child? No. Well, technically, yes, but in my opinion, no. And it's kind of an odd thing kind of dealing with. We don't have the food issues, luckily, because we actually, we did at first, and then we kind of gradually moved away from it. We're lucky that she'll eat almost anything, but we kind of try to give her food in increments. Fruit and bread she cannot have until she eats the rest of her plate, because otherwise she will fill her stomach with those two items and not eat a single bit of meat. Which actually,
that's her preferred. Yeah, that's her preferred food then, right?
Yeah,
fruits and bread.
Yeah, and it actually got to the point to where she had to she was actually anemic. And then once we started getting her back on chicken and other meats that actually had iron in it, it had vitamin D, had all these minerals, we were able to actually transition her off of the medication, which I'm not sure if anybody else realizes, but at least with our daughter, routine is golden. So normally a kid, you change medications or you change something, they forget about the next day. It actually took us 2 weeks of me having to explain no more medicine before she finally stopped basically having a meltdown because I wouldn't give her, the medicine she no longer had. And of course, now she's on melatonin. So I kind of expect it to kind of keep going until we can figure out a way to get her back down to sleep. So,
yeah. So, yeah, it seems like my son, Aiden, I think he's the oldest of our kids. We first started noticing he's been diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, and Tourette's. We first started noticing his issues before pre-K. And so we had him tested for autism because we weren't quite sure what it was. But he had some social issues and things like that. Very smart kid, but we just knew something was off. So we had him tested and he wasn't considered autistic. They labeled him with something that no one's ever heard of called disruptive behavior syndrome. And basically they did this because they knew that there was an issue, but they didn't really have any category that he fit cleanly into. So they kind of made one up so that he could get services in school. So through first grade, he had an IEP, but because educationally he's smart and he's on track, they ended that. So for the past 2 years, he's been going without any kind of services, but socially, he's lost. He doesn't get social norms. So right now we're trying to get him a 504 plan. So that's what we're in the process of now, because that doesn't just relate to educational needs, it's other needs as well. So it will help him work on his social issues. And he's starting to realize that he's different, you know, especially with the Tourette's, because of some of his tics and stuff and the noises that he makes. But the good things about what he has is the doctors say that as kids get older, it will probably get worse as he gets closer to his teen years. And then most of the time with Tourette's, it's something that drops off and there'll probably won't be an issue as he goes through his adult life. And ADHD, kids can learn to manage that through whatever medication or what have you. And we're ones that don't like medication, but unfortunately he's on medication, but the medication that he's on helps both the Tourette's and the ADHD without really any side effects. Cause when he first started, we gave him some medicines. We've switched through a few to see what was best. And it was like we lost him, you know, he wasn't Aiden anymore. You know, he was withdrawn and tired and lethargic, and he just wasn't the fun kid that he was. So we're like, nope, it's either nothing or we got to figure something out. And then once he got diagnosed with the Tourette's, the doctor gave us something called guanfacine, and it's very low dose, and it's just to manage the Tourette's so that hopefully everything's not as that bad. And one of the good things about that is it also helps with the attention and the ADHD. So he's the same kid and we don't have any issues with that. We're just trying to get him into the 504. But he is, like I said, social issues. He's overreacts to lots of things. He doesn't know how to. There's something that he considers was an injustice to him, it just ruins his entire day. But with that said, he sees a psychologist psychologist in school every so often, which helps things out as well. Since we are speaking of the educational side a little bit now, Dave, what are some things that you think that every parent should know education-wise?
Oh, boy. Well, you mentioned the 504 plan, and I'm sure your listeners know, but that's really it's a plan developed to ensure that your kid, a kid who has had a disability identified under the law, receives the accommodations they need, you know, to ensure academic success. And I guess that's the first thing I would say is that you do have the right to ensure that your child receives the education that he or she has a right to, and that he or she has every opportunity to be successful, not only in school, but among peers and just going about their day. Don't ever feel intimidated by any group or building or school or collection or meeting that you have to attend as an advocate for your child, because he or she deserves the best and you should be given access to that. And the other thing, a lot of you talked about earlier, like the story about, of course, she runs out to chase the ball in front of judgmental moms, right? She would never do it when no one's around. And these things happen. You don't have the time to sit down and say, oh, look, here's a situation. Here's what's really going on. And that can be regrettable. And when you're in that situation, and I know what it's like, and when you wish you could sit and say, oh, look, here's what's the situation and here's why. It's not that. While those parents might go home with the wrong impression, you come home with the right attitude and your heart in the right place, and you know you're doing the right thing for your kid. And that is more important than what a random stranger had in his or her head at the end of the day. Know that you're doing the best, and you're doing the best you can. And it's a struggle every day, but you're in here, and your heart's in the right place, and your mind's in the right place and you're doing the right thing. So I guess that's what I would, initial advice I would give is you do have, you know, the right to a good education, and your child has a right to exist in society and be productive and happy in that existence. And that there will be times where a situation makes you feel like, oh boy, did that person just interpret me as the bad parent? And if that's the case, you know you're not the bad parent. So try to hang on to that in those situations.
Yeah, that's the thing that I've noticed from going through this is you are your kid's advocate. So when someone says no, you have to be able to say, well, I don't like that answer, and move on, because there are going to be people who say no, and there's going to be people who look at you cross because something they don't understand your situation because they're just seeing it from the outside. So the only thing that matters to me is, like you said, is making sure that my kid gets everything that he needs, every opportunity to succeed. And every kid deserves that opportunity. Chris?
Yeah. Well, like he was saying, one thing I've seen just with my daughter, we actually have a very clear communication with the school. My daughter actually brings home a notebook back and forth. But one thing I noticed during the IEP and all that is, some of the, at least here in Wisconsin, it's extremely strict to where, like, if they just have, say, sensory processing disorder, there's no way they'll get services. But because my daughter has expressive language disorder and just can't talk, that's what got her in. And it can sometimes be a battle because, at least at the three-year-old level, I'm not sure about the standard school system, it can sometimes be a battle that you almost can't win, but you have to, at least here we have like multiple places where you can get services. The school just happens to be funded, but I think at least my advice to parents is look around.
I forgot to mention that one of the things that my son has and what actually qualified him from services was his writing. He had a very difficult problem with his fine motor coordinations, and it really was apparent with his handwriting, and he's been getting services for that, and it's kind of opened up the whole world to him, to where we've seen a lot of progress with that. In fact, he's probably going to test out for his IEP this year, and I'm kind of like, okay, where are we going to go from here? And I already know we're going to request a 504. I want that in place before he starts next school year. And one comment about attention deficit disorder, I've had it all my life. There were times where I was not medicated in graduate school, and the wheels came off the cart, meltdown the whole nine yards, and barely didn't get my master's because of it. There are worse things than not being medicated if you can deal with that structure. If you can't, medication is not necessarily a bad option. The other comment I would have is that my wife, when she was in law school, there was a gentleman in her class that had a very severe tics and comments. And some of the comments that he was making, while on the surface seemed, they were funny to a certain extent because he had a fixation on a particular blonde in the classroom. You know, everything worked out in the end. So,
yeah. All right. So to me, I think something that is very important, obviously education is very important to the kids, for the kids' future. And we're talking about what's best for them, but they're not the only ones involved. Obviously us as parents are involved just as much, if not more, because we're raising them and they're learning from us. What is something that you think every parent should know, whether it be about your kid, they see you out in public, or just know about special needs in general? Dan, I'm gonna start with you. Since you've got one kid and you don't know any different than the life that you have right now, what is one thing that you think every parent should know?
Well, I think that instinctively most parents know not to go shoving their hands in other people's kids' faces. You would hope that anyways, but again, from experience, not too many people do. One thing that any other person, anybody like at the public at large, you know, not necessarily another parent, the public at large, I wish knew not to do that. You know, people have a fixation with cute things, babies being cute. You know, obviously, you know, people get fixations with babies, and it's like all adult inhibition goes away when there's an adorable child in the room. when there's a bratty child in the room, you know, all of a sudden, you know, everybody's a jerk. But, you know, I just wish people would realize that, you know, it's not okay to just go up and be in a kid's face. You wouldn't do it to a dog. Shouldn't do it to a dog. You shouldn't do that to a kid either, you know?
Yeah. So basically, you just want people to know that when you're politely telling them to please leave your kid alone, you're not being an ass. You're just looking out for the welfare of your child.
Exactly. And for the most part, I don't have the problem with them necessarily coming up to my kid when it's just me and the kid. But, you know, my wife does, being the female. I'm a larger guy. I tend to
intimidate people.
Yeah, that's the word that people have used in the past, that, you know, I am rather broad through the shoulders and put off this vibe, just, you know, back the F off. So it's not as much of a problem when it's just me and the kid. However, when it's the three of us or just my wife and the kid, then yeah, more and more people want to come up and be interactive with them. I wish they wouldn't.
Yeah, and I've actually had that problem. We were actually with Red Lobster the other day, and this waiter walked up and just started touching my one-year-old's face. And my first thought was, you realize that my daughter has a pretty good cold and you are also handling food. It's like, it's,
yeah. And it's just insane. Just people, you know, if we are out at a restaurant or whatever, just people like walking by and reaching down and like patting him on the head or like tickling his side or whatever. It's like, keep your fingers off of my kid, man. Just stay away.
All right. What about you, Tony? What's something that you'd want someone to know?
I think it's important for people to realize that, you know, everybody needs understanding and compassion, and not put a judgment out there because you really don't know a situation.
Right. Dave, what about you from your side of things, from seeing it from the clinical, educational, I don't know what you want to consider that. What would you say to a parent who hasn't gone through having a child with special needs?
I'll echo something that was said earlier, and that's, we're all in this together. And by that, I mean life. And you never know what anyone is going through ever, whether it's the parent of a special needs child or just the person you see when you're dropping off your mail to post office. And this sounds so hokey, but just treat everyone well, because you never know what happened in a person's day or what's happening in a continuing basis on a person's day. Or just because, like I said, we're all in this together, and what happens to me affects you guys, and what happens to you affects each other. Just be kind and patient and tolerant, and we'll all have much more pleasant lives.
Be excellent to each other and party on.
Exactly. There's the t-shirt.
Now, I want to talk about coping, not for the kids, but for the parents. Because mm-hmm. when you first find out, oh my God, my kid's not the perfect little angel that I was that I was told I was getting, you know, and
right. There was an agreement. What happened?
Exactly. The agreement was broken. So when that finally dawns on you and you realize, okay, life's going to be a lot harder now. I want to know, what do you guys do to cope, or what do you guys do to unwind, to, you know, because you can't be in awesome parent mode 24/7, 365 days, you know. So what do you guys do to unwind, to relax? What are your coping mechanisms for getting through these, especially when you have a really, really tough day? Chris, how about you?
When we found out, it was actually no shock to us. But of course, me and my wife both work. She's worked with with disabled adults. I've worked in the EMS field, as well as nursing home. So that itself helped, but we had a harder time explaining to our oldest child why she couldn't help her sister with everything. Why we had to try to get, why Abby had to do therapy herself. Because of course our oldest just loved to be helpful. And then of course it became really hard when our third child was born, because there was this quick change in routine. And I think that's what was the hardest thing, was kind of having to take a step back. And I'd say, the thing I do to kind of, for lack of better words, when we have, as I like to put it, a bad day, I usually will actually either binge watch a TV show or work on my Raspberry Pi.
Ooh, you have a Raspberry Pi. Very cool.
And I've actually literally taken the entire case apart, taken everything, erased the operating system, just because it was just such a bad day that I needed to focus on something else. And luckily right now with Girl Scout season, it's been yelling at the computer because the system that our council uses was written by a five-year-old, I swear.
Hey, I hear you on that. My living room has been stacked to the ceiling with cases of cookies for months now. We're almost done.
We're halfway through and my garage has cookies. And then I realized this morning when I was going out to check, I've been so kind of busy with Abigail, my middle child, that I didn't realize that we were actually out of a cookie and we have a cookie booth coming up. So it's one of those where we've gotten sometimes so wrapped up with her appointments and dealing with our insurance issues that we've been having, that sometimes we actually forget. We actually had the house so bad in terms of just safety. It was so messy. We had stuff and we literally, to the point it took 4 days just to clean, because we were so wrapped up in appointments and insurance and everything else, we didn't even think to pick up the living room at the end of the day, because we were trying to get her to sleep right after her losing her compression and weighted vest, which for her just basically has regressed her down to almost day one for her sensory issues.
What about you, Tony? How do you relax, cope? What is your mechanism?
Well, I feel really blessed because my son had some significant issues early on with meltdowns and decompensations and, you know, freak out modes. As he's gotten a little bit older, he's gotten a good bit better with that. And when he has a not such a good moment, I address it head on. In fact, I'm brutally honest with him, and I'm direct and honest and say, wait a minute. You know, what's the issue? You need to calm down for a second. You need to think about what's going on. And then I kind of lead him through, you know, where we are and what's happened. And I try to make him kind of look at the perspective. Why did this happen? What is your reaction? What might be a better way to handle it? And I think between what they do at school for him and being mindful of it at home, he's a lot less prone to just freak out without some issue going on. And sometimes he starts to go there, and I've gotten fairly good at bringing him back to a position to where he doesn't need to go there to get his feelings out or to express what the issue is.
Mm-hmm. So, but the big question though is, how do you unwind after a hard day or step away for a little bit?
I've got some other outside activities that I do photography. I get out for some, I'm involved with our county as far as a county board that I'm involved with as far as parks and open spaces. And I get an opportunity to get out from time to time, but I really like being with my son. I even take him with me when we go to the photography club. So it's something that, yeah, I enjoy getting away, but a lot of times I get away and then I'm thinking, well, what's going on with him or how's my wife doing or what have you. So
you like getting away, but you like being home too.
Yeah. The connected part to it, you know, it's more the connection than.
I know exactly what you mean. Dan, how about you?
Besides whiskey, I try wind therapy on the weekends. I'll hop on the motorcycle and go for a ride. I'll go see a movie by myself or if there's one playing that I want to see, anything just to kind of step away and get my mind off of it. Riding the bike's a very good way to do that because, I don't know if any of you guys ride, but there isn't much you can do, but think about being in the moment when you're on the back of a motorcycle and it helps clear the head and just, take you away from everything that might be weighing down on you. It's really good.
Very cool. Me, I'm lucky. I have a, mother-in-law who takes the kids every Friday night. So every Friday night, they stay the night at grandma's house. So we always have Friday night date night.
Wow, that's great.
Lucky.
Yes. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so,
man, I'm super jealous so right now.
So we get a whole night?
We get a whole night and part of a morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, I would sleep so much.
I hate you. I want your life.
I know. I sleep so hard. No. So we get date night, but over the summer from April until about October, every Tuesday I play Ultimate Frisbee with a bunch of guys. We just go and run crazy for 2 hours straight and then exhausted from that. So like you said, Dan, when you're just doing something like that, it just, you can't think of anything but what you're doing, then you don't have to do it long and you're good to go. You know, just that little bit of you time is really all anyone really needs. And then you're good to get back into things. What was that?
Just depressurize the cabin a little bit.
Exactly. I think I want to end the show on a really high note. So I'm going to ask you guys, what is some funny, I know we've already heard some from a little bit from Chris here about this, so hopefully he has others, some funny, shocking stories about your kids, something that would make you say, holy you know. So Chris, since you've already shared one, I'm going to go with you first. Okay.
Okay. No, actually this happened during our IEP meeting. We were trying to figure out all of her plans and her goals, and she actually walked over to the whiteboard, grabbed a marker, and of course, my first horror with any toddler grabbing a marker, and actually drew a perfect circle. So, of course, the...
During the IEP meeting.
Yeah, so the occupational therapist is like, oh, this is perfect, and asked her to draw another one. And instead of doing that, she decided to do the typical squiggles, and... Since then, we have not gotten her to make that perfect circle.
This is one time only.
Yeah. And it's been one of those tours like,
yes, yeah, right.
It's one time that my back of my head is going, oh God, this is going to go in badly. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And I even took a picture of it. I'm like, when we got home, I asked her to do it. She just kind of scribbled on the paper. And I'm like, see, hun, she actually did it.
All right, Tony, you got any funny stories?
Well, I think the worst thing that we've encountered recently is that my son was trading bites with a classmate, and he wound up going to the assistant principal's office because apparently this had been going on over like a 2-day period, and we got notice of it, and actually the vice principal called, and you know, we talked to our son. It was like, you know, what's the deal? And it's like, well, she bit me or no, her hand got too close to my mouth and I accidentally bit her. And I'm like, okay, can you explain to me how this happened again? And he's like, you know, got through the whole thing. So we're just like, okay. So, you know, mom and dad go, you know, biting's wrong. You won't do biting, you know, this, that, and the other. And it was something that at the age of 7 years old, I really didn't think we were going to be having to deal with. But everything's settled down. He hasn't bit anybody. Nobody's bit him, and he's had a good year for the rest of the year. So
good, good. How about you, Dan?
One of the things that Liam's taken to doing lately is anytime you go to like offer him a bottle or offer him a snack or something, if he has anything else in his hands before he takes whatever is you're offering from, he won't just drop it. He'll take it and he'll throw it as hard as he can behind him. Like, he's like, I am done with you, pacifier. I'm done with you, bottle. I am done with you, toy that I would just picked up. You know, whatever it is, he just forcefully just rips it away from him and throws it as hard as he can behind him without even looking. Like, he's just like, I am done. And it cracks me up every time. He's just like,
we had a good thing, pacifier, but it is over.
Yes. Yes.
My son, I got two stories and they're really quick. So I'm going to share both of them. Aiden, when he was four, he has a very big fear of inanimate objects that move that he thinks should not be moving. So, you know, like those Christmas displays or with like Rudolph, and all of a sudden Rudolph starts moving, or, you know, people in costumes, things like that. He wants no part of it whatsoever. He even knows that characters are people dressed up because we've shown him, he's seen it, he knows it, but still nothing to do with it. Well, we were at Rib Fest out here one Memorial Day. I think he was like four when it happened, and we saw the guy in the pig costume coming, and we distracted him and kept him looking the other way. And then we're sitting down on a picnic table eating, and all of a sudden Aiden gets up and runs for his life, and because the pig guy started coming back the other way. And I got up and I chased him. And I swear to God, I've never seen a kid run so fast. I am just so lucky that, and I'm not the slowest person in the world, but I am so lucky that that kid fell down, because otherwise I was never catching that kid, because he was so far away from me by the time I got there. It was unbelievable. And then the other one is, we were at Cub Scouts one time, and he had his arms around these two ladies that were there. He's all lovey and stuff, and they're talking, and I don't know how it came up, but they were talking about beer or alcohol or something. He's like, oh, I don't like alcohol, but my mommy really loves it.
She's an aficionado.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, she'll have a glass of wine with dinner or something occasionally, and he'll ask, oh, is it is that alcohol? Yeah, you can't have it. So he came to assume that mommy really likes alcohol. So he let these two ladies know. It was hilarious. Like, my wife was red as red could be. Chris, you got another story?
Yeah, just some of the talkings remind me of, we were at WIC, and this little boy actually walked up to my youngest when she was in the car seat, and Abby, my child, she went in front as loud as she could, said, no, my sissy. Or actually she said, my Maddie, which for Madison. And I'm like, wow. Okay.
Nice. How about you, Dave? I'm sure you've seen some things, whether with your kids or with other parents' kids that are just
yes.
When you were working.
I've got so many hilarious stories from work over the years, but I'll just share this one very brief. My wife is currently a special needs teacher. We actually we met at the school I was teaching at way back in the 90s, and she still does it. And she's just, got a plethora of hilarious stories. And there's one student she's had for a few years now whom we both think is just hilarious. And we were at church a few weeks ago, and he and his family were there. And when service is over, the priest sort of holds the door open and, says goodbye to everybody. And so the two families are working out, and as they walked out, this boy looked up at the pastor who was holding the door, and he goes, "Thank you, Jesus." And we all laughed because that was rather hilarious.
That's awesome. Yep. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for tonight. I would like to thank my co-hosts, Tony Hernandez, Chris Burkhart, and Dan Scott, for making this such a great show. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Great.
That's what we do.
I would also like to thank our special guest, Dave Kalo, for taking time to join us here tonight. I hope I might be able to persuade you to come do some more shows with us in the future.
I think we can work that out. And thanks so much for having me. It was a great time chatting about this with you guys.
Good. You have anything you want to plug while you're here?
Oh, boy. Let's see. I do have a show of my own, which has nothing to do with this. It's about working from home. It's called Homework. You can find it over at the 5x5 Network. That's 5x5.tv/homework. And I also do weekly articles at a website called Unclutterer at unclutterer.com for all of your organizational needs.
All right. I also have, I gave you some statistics at the beginning of the show. We'll have those in the show notes. And please, please, please follow us on Twitter at SADPOD. That's at SAHDPOD. Like our Facebook page and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And don't forget to gush all over the reviews. Special thanks to Micah and me for the use of their excellent song, Super Daddy Fun Day. And last, I would like to thank my son, Aiden, for doing our intro to today's show. And remember, everyone, have a super daddy fun day. It's just another ordinary, typical day. Me and my daddy gonna go out and play. I hope my baby sister doesn't get in the